All right. Hello and welcome to Prepared, the German podcast. And today, and I am so happy that he made it, and as you can hear, it's English. And today, my guest is radio host, sports enthusiast, husband and father, the Flash fan, geek, and my friend, Gary. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Eric. Good to see you and hear your voice again. I've missed you.
Yes, I miss you too, my friend. And it's really, as I said before, I'm so happy that we do not talk that often. But in the list I've just mentioned, you know, this is, you know, how I get to know you. But the main reason is, of course, because you have been in the army and you and you spent some time, pretty long time in Germany, and there we met. And so, yeah, and that's why he's on the show, not because he's just a great guy, but also to talk about your life. Yes, Gary. So how are you doing? It's Halloween today. And how is it over there in North Carolina? Just tell me.
It's a little chilly this morning. But other than that, the peanut trucks are driving by our house. We are surrounded by peanut fields and cotton fields all around our house. So they are harvesting the peanuts here in North Carolina and the cotton. And yeah, and a lot of the peanuts fall off of their trucks and I get free peanuts. I just pick them up on the road.
I just wanted to say it's like free peanut season. How cool is that? I can't even imagine. So the thing is, here in Germany, I've not even seen like a peanut plant or a peanut field. So we texted about it, and I only knew it because of some videos like boiled peanuts, and you don't like them. So, but perhaps can you describe me what it is, because I've never kind of tasted it. So for you out there, if you don't know, there's a thing obviously in the States or in certain areas. Okay, there are some areas where you put like salted peanuts in your Dr. Pepper. There are some areas where you boil the peanuts, as far as I understand, a pretty heavy seasoned kind of brew in a kind of boil, and then you eat them with the shell. Is that right?
Yeah, you still shell them, but yeah, a lot of people like the way that they taste after they've been boiled. I'm not one of those people. I've never been a fan of putting them in my Coke or Dr. Pepper either, but that's pretty old school right there.
I understand. It's pretty. Yeah, but you're a cool guy. So then, tell me. So, Gary, where did you grow up in the States? Because it's interesting to know, since you now live in North Carolina, but you're not originally from there.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Colorado. Born in Denver, and raised in northern Colorado in a city called Greeley. Lots of agriculture around there, lots of farms there, mainly cows, and lots of corn and potatoes and onions and stuff like that. I grew up in Colorado and didn't like it much, so I joined the army and left.
that is, I don't know if you knew, but in the last podcast, or one of the last podcasts I interviewed, you still know Kevin Dunn, the retired lieutenant colonel?
Yes, I miss him too.
And we enjoyed it very much talking. And he said kind of the same about New York, so he didn't like it. New York was, or New York City was too small for him, and he joined the army to just got away from it. So, but let's talk about it if you like, because I'm always interested in that. So you grow up, your parents, I don't know. So they had a farm. Did you had to work on a farm, or what was it like?
Yes. No, my dad was a truck driver. We used to rent houses from farmers. We would rent farmhouses just so he would have more space to park his trucks. We lived on a farm, but we weren't farmers. I did work on farms in the summertime. One of my friends owned a Christmas tree farm, and we used to work on the Christmas tree fields in the summertime. And then sometimes we would go out and help the farmers when they would pick the potatoes or the onions, stuff like that. And if you weren't a farmer, it was, you know, for me, if you weren't farming, then it was time to leave. So that's kind of why I joined the army, to get out of there. And also,
I understand. So let's get to it later. So first of all, you're born in Denver. So we have to advise the explicit button. So the Broncos fucked the Chiefs. So how about that?
That's right. Yeah, that's
pretty cool.
Finally, we had not beaten them for 8 years. We had never beaten Patrick Mahomes since he became their quarterback. So it was wonderful to destroy them this past Sunday. And
was really a destruction. So for all of you out there who are not football fans, but you know, the Broncos, the Chiefs are like, they are still contestant for the Super Bowl this year, I would say.
So
they're pretty good.
They're the defending champions. They're very good.
Yes.
Them and the Eagles and the 49ers are having a good season. And the Dolphins. That's Melissa's team. Melissa,
the Dolphins,
my wife.
Right.
She grew up in Florida, so she's a Dolphins fan, but they're having a really good season too.
Yeah, I saw it. So, but, you know, and for you out there, if you listen to us, you know, Gary bleeds orange. That's what he told me when we met, that he's a diehard Broncos fan. And so,
growing up in Greeley, where the Broncos had their summer training camp every season.
Oh,
so
awesome.
They would all come. Yeah. For a month or two, they would come to Greeley and practice. And that's when they, you know, for y'all that aren't familiar with how football works in America, you have summer camps, and that's how you decide who makes the 54-man roster at the to start the year. So there's tryouts, there's getting used to the new coaches, used to the new players, all that stuff. And they do it. They did it at the University of Northern Colorado campus, which is in Greeley, and they would do it, and we would be able to just go to the practices and watch them. And at the end of practices, they would go back to their locker rooms, and they would walk through this gambit of fans, and they would sign autographs for us. So I got to meet John Elway and Dan Reeves, our old coach, and Steve Atwater. I mean, I could list dozens of Broncos that got to meet over the course of my, you know, teenage years. That was probably the highlight of growing up in Greeley.
I hear from it, and I see, you didn't like it that much. And as said before, you once told me you've been one of the guys, you know, wearing the aquamarine chucks. So, or no, the I didn't know the color. You were more on, like, and don't get me wrong, but more on the geek side in high school. Was it
Yeah, most of my friends walked around with Batman shirts on and Flash shirts, and, you know, collected baseball cards and played Nintendo and stuff like that. Yeah, we were losers. If we were growing up today, we would I think it'd be better. But back then, it wasn't. It wasn't very attractive to the ladies.
I understand. So this was way before Big Bang Theory, and now geeks are hot, you know?
That's right.
So, but did you had a hard time in high school, or was it just like you were a group of geeks, like growing together, you had fun, like doing also the fun stuff? But high school was okay. So it was no trauma for you.
No, there was no trauma. I was on the swim team in high school. Loved swimming. And high school was just something you had to do, you know. It was like you had to check that block. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I knew I wanted to do other things and go other places. I just got it over with more than anything.
Okay, I understand. So when did you actually decided to join the army? So was it like there was a recruiter coming to high school, or was a recruiting office in your or was it just in your mind? And we are talking like mid-90s. Mm-hmm. Just give me a hint.
What was the time? I graduated from high school in 1990. And I mean, I was 17 years old. I knew that, that if I wanted to be a journalist, I wanted to be a broadcasting, mm-hmm. do that, from a young age. And I knew the only way I could afford college was to enlist. So I talked to a Marine recruiter and none of what they were talking appealed to me. And then I talked to an Army recruiter and it went from there. I was 17 years old when I wanted to sign up for the Army, but my parents would have to approve me signing up. Yeah. And my mom was like, no, that's a man's decision, so you need to wait till you're 18 years old.
Okay.
So on my 18th birthday, I actually signed up for the Army. Like on the day, on my 18th birthday, I went to the MEPS station. That's a military entrance system. I don't know what the acronym stands mm-hmm. for, but I took the test. You know, you take this ASVAB test and scored a pretty good score, and then signed up to become a combat engineer.
And I see.
That was all on my 18th birthday. I wanted to sign up for journalism, but they told me I'd have to enlist for 5 years. I wanted to do that job, and I said, there's no way I'm going to spend 5 years in the Army. So I just took the most appealing to me job that was only a 2-year enlistment requirement.
Okay. And so let's stop here, because I only knew it from like movies or from TV shows about military. So that, so first of all, so besides being enlisted, there was kind of no option. I guess your parents couldn't afford college, so you wanted to go to college, and there were no. So, what would be other things you should have or could have done? Would be like being extremely good in high school and get a scholarship or something like that, or getting a sports scholarship, or being enlisted. So there's kind of no other way. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, if you were athletic, you could get an athletic scholarship, you know, if you, whatever sport, if your grades were good, you could get scholarships for academics, or if your parents, you know, had money, or if you wanted to take out student loans, you know, you can also do that to get into college.
Yeah.
But I wasn't athletic. I wasn't smart. My grades were below average and, you know, my parents aren't rich. So the only option for me was to serve for as short a time as I could and then get the GI Bill.
Okay. Speeding up to 2000. Yeah. When did we meet? 2012? In some
2010,
years more
2011.
Than
yeah. Well, that was.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, I got the fever though. I spent my first tour in Germany, in Heilbronn. I was stationed in Heilbronn, Wharton Barracks, in 1991. This was during the Gulf War and stuff. I was there in Germany, and I fell in love with the Army. I was like, this isn't a bad life, you know, especially getting able to go to Germany and stuff. And like you said, just ended up spending 21 years. My last assignment was in Schweinfurt, and got to meet amazing, you know, human beings like Eric and Kevin and Susie, like, of course, and Chris and Barb and Cusa.
All right, stop. Collaborate and listen. Okay, here we are again. Going back. So you, how was it like before joining the Army? So you saw the movies, but you never wanted to be like. You never wanted to be like an Army guy, so it was just the GI Bill. You've been there, is that right?
Well, the movies that came out in the 80s were Platoon and what was another?
Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket and The Thin Red Line, and of course, you know,
yeah,
Stripes, but that was a different
Or the great movie from 1990. Okay, it's 1990. It's right when you kind of, and this, it was like Charlie Sheen in Seals.
Yeah. Oh, we saw that movie in basic training. We had a weekend. They gave us like a night off and we went to the movie. Yeah. We were at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and we marched to the movie theater and we watched Navy Seals with Charlie Sheen. And
wow.
Oh, that was pretty cool though. That was fun. But yeah,
I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no, there was, I never was like gung ho or anything like that, or, mm-hmm. you know, wanted to do the soldier and stuff. I just needed mm-hmm. a way to pay for college, you know? So that was the way to pay for college.
So and then you let's start with your basic training. So just brief.
Sure.
So what was it like for you? Was it tough? Was it like a completely surprise? So as once again, I only knew it from movies. So mm-hmm. were you disappointed? Was it like the first couple of weeks?
Well, it was very stressful. It was very stressful because mm-hmm. You got yelled at everywhere you went, and you had to run everywhere you went. I was always good at just, you know, doing what I was told, and that was what I enjoyed about it the most. You know, I didn't have to make up my mind about anything. They told me what to wear. They told me where to be. They told me when to be there. And if you can do that, then you can be a success in the military. You know, that's 90% of your pathway to success is just showing up on time at the right place in the right uniform. But yeah, it was very stressful. There was always, you know, tension in the barracks mm-hmm. because, you know, it's all about testing how well you can manage stress. So yeah, it was stressful, but it was okay. I had really mm-hmm. cool guys that I met. We had I want to say like 8 guys in our room. We had bunk beds and stuff and lockers, and you had to make sure that your boots were shined and that your beds were made and you could bounce a quarter off your beds and all that other stuff. And you know, all that stuff was pretty cool. But it was stress, and you barely got any sleep. And you had the toughest thing I had to learn was to eat food fast.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the first time I went to Chow, they had red beans and rice, and I got a huge portion. And I was just eating like I ate when I was growing up. You know, I wasn't a fast eater. And about 5 minutes after I sat down, they're like, "Okay, let's go." And I hadn't even hardly touched my food yet. So I had got in line to dump your trays. And if you hadn't finished, of course, you get yelled at for not finishing your food. So I was finishing my food while I was in line to dump the trays. And that was one of the things I had to learn to do, was just eat faster. Everything you did, you know, you had to do it now. You had to be fast at everything. Yeah. So that was probably the toughest thing to do. But yeah, other than that... it was in Missouri. We got there in October, mm-hmm. and Missouri in the wintertime is just miserable. So our bivouacs, mm-hmm. our fields and training and stuff out in the woods of Missouri was miserable because it was so cold. It wasn't over strenuous as far as physical activity goes, because like I said, I swam in high school, so I was in pretty good shape. You know, so running wasn't an issue for me, and you know, none of that. But yeah, it was just the stress, and then learning how to eat fast was the hardest thing I had to adjust to.
Yeah, okay, I understand. But since you told, or we are not speaking about it, and as you know, in this podcast, it's sometimes also about like what equipment did you use? Did you had like the military sleep system already back then, or it was like in the 90s? So it was like still woodland, and you only had the booby, or what was it like?
Yeah, when we were in the barracks, you had, of course, the sheets and the wool blankets. That's what you slept on. But when we went out to the field, it was the old school sleeping bags and shelter halves and all that, you know, good stuff. And there was no whoopies. There was no poncho liners. That was something we had to buy ourselves. We had the ponchos, but not the liners. So, but yeah, you had the battle dress uniform with the with the black leather boots that you had to spit shine, and the field jackets and the pile caps, they called them, where they could come down over ears, but they never let us put them over our ears.
And then of course.
Yeah, because you had to all look the same.
Yeah, okay, I understand. So, okay, as far as I understand, well, back then when I joined the military in 2000, it was like 10 years later in Germany, you joined your basic training in the, like in the MOS, you would go on. So, you know, for me as an infantry officer, it's still, I was in kind of a normal infantry company, and they were, they were assigned to make the basic training. So you do this is like a basic training facility, I guess, in Missouri. Yeah. They only do basic training, right?
No, they do basic training and AIT. They call it advanced individual training. Okay. That's your MOS training.
Okay.
My MOS training was also at Fort Leonard Wood as a combat engineer. We did one station unit training, they call it now. But they also train military police at Fort Leonard Wood and the engineers again, plus equipment operators. They do all the training there at Fort Leonard Wood. So with us, we did basic training in 8 weeks, and then we took a weekend off, and then we came back to the same place and did our MOS training.
Okay. How was moving for you now from Colorado to Missouri? So was it different? So can you tell me about the distances? Because I just have like barely in my mind. So what would it be?
Oh, sure. I just took a, for traveling to Missouri, it was just a plane trip to St. Louis, from Denver to St. Louis, and then a bus ride from St. Louis down to Fort Leonard, which took like 2 hours. But we just had a change of clothes and whatever we had on our backs, and then our toiletry items, our toothbrushes and razors and stuff like that. And when we got to Fort Leonard Wood, we were there for a day or two, and they spent those first 2 days just giving us our uniforms and doing all the shots, and it was a big in processing more than anything. You know, took our first pictures and stuff so we could send those home to mom and dad. And then once we got all of our gear and everybody was all assembled. Once they had enough guys to fill the first a company worth of basic trainees, they put us on a cattle truck, they called it. It was basically a bus that you couldn't sit down. It's basically a bus that you stood up in. So you could fit as many as like 50, 60 soldiers in there with two duffel bags each. And we went to our basic training site. That's where all of our drill sergeants met us and started yelling at us, and we had to dump our duffel bags and do a full inventory and stuff. And that's where the stress really hit, because they're very good at testing you. And there were guys that would stare them in the eyes and want to fight them. And there are other guys that were crying, and other guys that were crawled up into the fetal position in the corner. I mean, I learned fast in basic training that if you just kept your eyes down and shut your mouth, then you were going to do well. The less they know you, the better off you were.
I see. But I just checked it. So from, you know, from Denver to that area is around like 800 miles. So it's not around the corner. So compared to Germany, it would be from like from the northern part of Germany to Munich. So it was quite a big, but it was quite of a big travel. So how did you felt in basic training? Did you wanted to go away, but was there one little part of regret in the first weeks, or did you just like, okay, now that's what I have to do and I do it?
Yeah. No regrets at all. It was almost like, okay, this is stressful, but this isn't as bad as I had thought it would be in my mind, you know, from seeing the movies like Full Metal Jacket and the Private Pile and Joker, you know, scenes that were played out in the beginning of that movie. But it wasn't nearly as bad as that. And, you know, you learned to, that's where you found out what battle buddies were, and you learned to lean on each other and stuff. So everybody was in the same situation, and you really had to lean on each other to just get through it. But yeah, there was no regrets. There have been no regrets to join the military. I loved every second.
Yeah. And this is the last question to the basic training. Did you found out some drill instructors were real assholes, or have they all been professional in testing you and doing the job?
Oh, they were all very professional. Of course, you know, they cussed a lot and stuff like that. But no, every single drill sergeant was amazing. We had one drill sergeant. He was a really small Filipino drill sergeant named Sergeant Pinzon. And he was the smallest, but he was also the most frightening out of them all, because he could really yell. He was good at the yelling, and he had so much energy. We had another drill sergeant that was Samoan, just big dude. And he was probably the quietest and coolest one out of them all. But he was a ranger and stuff. He was a bad dude. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you met them at the beginning, another guy was from Czechoslovakia. His name was Sergeant Koska. You were kind of like, boy, I'm glad these guys are on my side, because they were some bad dudes, you know, right from the get go.
But this is so interesting. And I think everyone who's enlisted or has been in the army, you still remember after even like 30 years, you remember the names of your drill instructors and you remember what their sound of their voice was like, and what they looked like and what characters they've been. So this is really, it is an intense time. And sometimes it's really, so at least for me, it was like this. If you have a very good instructor, then you connect with him, and it is your role model, and in the best way. So you want to be like this guy if it is a good one. So, but there are also examples of guys who are not that capable of that, because it works a little different in Germany. So in Germany, normally every NCO could be assigned to be in a basic training, and that's something. Well, I always enjoy being, so I also was like as a young officer's candidate, I've been as basic training instructor and leading a basic training platoon, and I always enjoyed it, because it was you had, even if they were older than you have been, they knew nothing about the army life, and you could bring that to them, and it's something very fulfilling. Okay, so combat engineer, I didn't even knew that, because when we met, you've been a support guy, a logistics guy, right?
Yeah, I did. I signed up for combat engineer. That was fun because you got to mess with explosives, and we 18 years old, what's better than you know, getting handed a brick of C4 or a stick of dynamite.
Yes.
We also learned how to build bridges. We worked on the Bailey Bridge, which was a really cool experience. So that was really fun. But I knew mm-hmm. that if I was going to stay in, I didn't want to do that over the long term.
Okay.
So
you did your AIT as a combat engineer, and what happened then?
Then I received my first assignment, and that was with the 237th mm-hmm. Engineer Battalion in Heilbronn. And I got orders, and a bunch of us went to the same unit from my basic training, which was really cool. So you had familiar guys, but yeah, we traveled to Germany. You know, we took a couple of days off, to go home and see our families and stuff before we went to our first assignment. But yeah, then we went to Heilbronn, Germany with the 237th engineers. And, we were there. We actually arrived in Germany on the night that the United States began their attacks on Iraq. This was Operation Desert Storm and Desert Shield.
Yes.
So there, it was pretty tense there, you know, because you didn't know if you were going to go to a unit that was getting ready to deploy, you know, down to the Gulf or what, you know. So we went to our units mm-hmm. in Germany, and our unit didn't actually deploy anywhere. But they grabbed people. I mean, there was hundreds of guys who would get snatched up to go help out mm-hmm. down in Iraq and in Saudi Arabia, which was where we were at before we started the invasion.
So this is quite interesting, but I still go back to 18-year-old Gary getting his papers and knowing now it's from Missouri and from Colorado now to Germany. Did you had a choice? Did you wish something to go somewhere?
Well, I always wanted to live in California. So they give you like a dream sheet, they call it, when you sign up.
Yes.
And you can pick where you want to go. And my first choice was California. Back then there was one post or two posts in California. Germany was my second choice.
Okay.
And I can't remember what my third choice was, maybe Florida or something.
Okay.
But yeah, but I got orders to Germany. Cool. You know, I was in high school. I took German class. I took 2 years of German in high school, and I always wanted to visit Europe, you know? So I was like, this is perfect, you know? But yeah, that was really fun. Being 18 years old, especially in Germany, because I didn't drink when I was in high school, you know, I had two or three beers all the time. So being able to go to Germany and experience the nightclubs and the festivals, those were so much fun. And all the other stuff we used to do in Germany, it was just a treat. Gyros, getting a donor kebab. I mean, there were so many things about Germany that was just amazing.
And still Donnerstag is Donnerstag, right?
So yes, Donnerstag, yes.
Wow, so cool. But this is something when I talked with Kevin about, you know, his first deployment to Germany, he told me like we talked about it like beginning of the 80s, and he just went there and saw this little garden areas and thought like, oh God, the Germans live in this small huts, you know, in this small garden. And so what was your imagination of Germany? Was it all like Bierstein and Lederhosen, or what was, can you remember? So what was it like?
Yeah. You know, it is probably the same as Kevin. I mean, you think of beer and you think of the Lederhosen and you think of the BMWs and Volkswagens and the Autobahn and all that other stuff when you think of Germany.
Yes.
So I had all of that in my mind, and not all of it was wrong. that's what I thought, you know, I was going to get into when we went to Germany. You know, it's just, we talked to our drill sergeants who had all been to Germany before and asked them what it was like. And they said, well, you're going to spend a lot of time in the field. So when you're not in the field, you got to make sure that you enjoy Germany. Get out to, you know, and see the people. Don't be a barracks rat, they called it. But yeah, most of our time was spent in the field. We would go to Wildflecken, Wildflecken. We would go to Affenbeer. We went to Hohensfeld a lot. There was a Aschaffenburg had a big training site down there that we would go to. But yeah, we spent a lot of the time that we were in Germany in the field. That wasn't fun at all.
Yeah, I see. But okay, still there as an engineer. And to be honest, I still remember, although I was like, you know, there were two big events, of course, in this time for me from East German mm-hmm. boy. You know, there was the fall of the of the Iron Curtain, and and I remember how this was. But I also remember with the Operation Desert Storm or Desert Shield, like the Gulf War, that in my home we never turned on the TV then, you know, in the evening. But I know at this time, so my mother turned on TV because she said there's a war going on. And I was like, okay, what's happening? And for you, it must be even more intense, like, you know, being in Germany and this war began. So, but you did not deploy it in this, this war. But you later on, you had the opportunity to go in these beautiful countries over there. So what was it then like? So let's make bigger steps. So when was your decision to become a sergeant or an NCO? So when did that happen, or what was it all about? What came later?
Well, after I was. When my first enlistment was getting ready to end, I had been let's back up a little bit. When Operation Desert Storm ended, the Army decided to downsize. Okay.
Yeah.
So they told a bunch of us, okay, you're not going to stay here in Germany anymore. They got rid of 7th Corps, which was the corps I was assigned to. So they said, okay, some of you guys are going to be assigned to other places in Germany and others will be assigned to other places in the United States. And I was sent to Fort Campbell, Kentucky to, I was reassigned there and my enlistment came up and I still wanted to be in the Army, but I didn't want to be an engineer anymore. And I reclassified to legal specialist.
I
did that for 7 years at I actually went back to Germany after I reclassified. I was at Fort Campbell for over 2 years with the 101st Airborne Division and learned to jump out of helicopters, you know, and all that cool stuff. But I reclassified to legal. And after I did that, they sent me back to Germany and I was actually in Frankfurt with 5th Corps in the Abrams building, the IG Farben building. For about 6 months, and then 5th Corps headquarters moved down to Heidelberg, and I was in Heidelberg for 3 years. But I did that for a while, and that's the, you know, and then they sent me to Arizona. That's where I met Melissa, and then I got out of the Army for about a year and a half.
But what is a legal specialist? What are you doing? So we're working for a JAG, or what is it?
Yes. A legal specialist is a paralegal in the Army. You can work in legal assistance and help people who are having trouble. Maybe they need to get a divorce or something like that. We help soldiers file their electronic taxes, their IRS tax forms.
Okay.
There's a criminal justice section, so you actually are the ones who court martial or give non-judicial punishment to soldiers. You do all the paperwork and stuff. You have Army lawyers. You work for them directly, and you basically do all the paperwork for them and guide them and assist them. And I worked for trial defense for a while too, so I was working for a defense lawyer. Did that for over a year.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. And this was.
There's also international law. We did. We went to Hungary when I was in 5th Corps. We went to Hungary for like 6 months and helped with the build up to all the stuff that happened in Bosnia in the mid 90s. So okay. we were helping with the status yeah. of forces agreements and all that other stuff.
Okay, and you still enjoy. Mm-hmm. And you enjoyed it. So it was like more yeah, like yeah. a desk job, but you still enjoyed it, yes?
Yeah, yeah. I was yeah. not a fan of the field and crawling yeah. through the mud and stuff like that. I enjoyed the desk life. I was a good pogue or chairborne.
Yeah, okay.
Soldier. Yeah. I enjoyed the yeah, office okay. more than the field and the tents and the mud and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. So but you've still been a private, so you're not been sergeant or what was it like?
No, right after I switched to legal, I was promoted to sergeant.
Ah, I see. Okay.
That was mm-hmm. in 1994. Yeah. I was promoted to sergeant.
Okay.
And then that's why I sent me to Germany after that.
Okay. And did you still had to do what is like an army? So in Germany, if you can be Mannschaftsdienstgrad, that means like you're going from how yeah. to translate from like okay. private to the highest private thing. And sure. as soon as you say you want to be like an NCO,
yeah.
Then you I'm need sorry. To, you need to prepare for the training. So you become yeah. squad leader and group leader.
Sure.
But is it the same or yeah?
Every month the commander goes over the promotions list. And mm-hmm. they determine who they because you're a specialist or a corporal. That's E4.
Yes.
And you have to be recommended by your commander to be promoted mm-hmm. to sergeant. And
okay.
When that happens, then they have what they call a promotion board, where the battalion has a command sergeant major, and he convenes a board with four first sergeants that are also in the battalion. Mm-hmm. And they have this board where you report to them, and they ask you all kinds of questions: mm-hmm. land navigation, first aid, principles of leadership, all that stuff. They grill you for a good 5 or 6 minutes, and okay. then they turn around and recommend you for promotion or recommend you to not be promoted. And then once you're recommended for promotion, you have this promotable status. And every month the Army comes out with this list because you have to have so many points. Okay. So
yeah.
if I get a perfect score on my PT test, my physical training test, I get 100 points for that. If I shoot 40 yeah. out of 40 at the weapons qualification, I get 100 points for that. I get points for military correspondence courses. I get points for – you can get up to like 900 points, or now it's 800 points.
Yeah.
And the more points you have, the better your chances are, because every month the Army says, okay, we're going to promote this many guys in this MOS. So yes. if you have 650 points – you're promoted. They call it the cutoff scores. So if you're okay. if you're above this, then you're promoted and you get promoted to the next rank. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you have to go to what's called the primary leadership development course, which every I post okay. has one. And that's like 4 weeks of basic training all over again. But okay. you know, not okay. quite as bad, but they grill you on stuff and they teach you how to be a leader. And
yeah, okay.
teach you, you know, all the good stuff about counseling and mm-hmm. leading and yeah, just yeah, it's just another 4 weeks of pretty intense training. That was more intense than basic training, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because it's more like for the head. You know, you need now yeah. you have to now you have to, you know, be in front of somebody. I see. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You're giving a huge responsibility. Yeah. So they have to make mm-hmm. sure that you can handle it.
Okay. So then you spend it some time at Fort Campbell. That's what you said, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And Fort Campbell Air Assault School. Did that when I was 20 years old. That was really fun.
Yeah. I see. So Air Assault was like going with the helicopters, like pass roping and stuff like that, right?
Yes, yes. It's a pretty intense 10 days. You have to learn sling load operations and you rappel out of helicopters and you rappel from a tower, and you have to do a 6-mile road march, and the last day you do a 12-mile road march within 3 hours. And that's, you know, as soon as you cross the finish line on that 12-mile road march on day 10, they put the wings on your chest.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was so much fun. It was so much fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, see, I didn't even know that, because I've never seen what. Yeah, when we, I didn't know if you did. You still wear your wings when you had the UCP?
I wore my wings for 20 years.
Yeah, okay, cool. But I didn't know. So, but yeah, really cool. And okay, so still you enjoyed it, but still you've been like the legal guy. So, and you enjoyed still being, you know, at a desk and doing that stuff, right?
Yeah. I enjoyed the desk work. So, paperwork more than other stuff.
Yeah, okay. But then you, what happened then? So then you went to Arizona, or?
Yes. After Heidelberg, I went to Arizona, Fort Huachuca. It's in southern Arizona, right next to the Mexico border. I lived in Phoenix for a couple of years, and my grandparents lived there. So I asked to be stationed there, to be close to them. So that was really cool. But that's the Arizona is where the military intelligence training is done. Mm-hmm. And also the United States Army Signal Command is down there at Fort Huachuca. But it's wonderful. And you're just surrounded by mountains. So if you like mountain biking or hiking in the mountains, then you're in the perfect spot. Or if you want to spend a day at Tombstone, it's only 20 minutes away. You know, you see all the Wyatt Earp and shoot out at the OK Corral reenactments. Yeah, it's all right there. It's a wonderful place. But that's where I met Melissa at Fort Huachuca. She was a soldier with the Officer Advanced Course MI school there.
Yes.
She was in the admin office. Yeah.
Well, very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And being in Arizona, and it's, and as you said, like, you know, when you started the army, you wanted to stay for like 2 years, and now get on and on and on. So is it like you told it's like being addicted, but, you know, is it like being comfy in this area? So and then, you know, just keep it going on. So did you had a chance to quit, or did they sometimes in Germany, as you know, perhaps that you are. Most of the time you have your time contracts and then you have to kind of leave. So what was it like with you?
Yeah, well, at 10 years, and we'll go back to, at 10 years, you have to, we call it shit or get off the pot. Okay. Uh-huh. That's where you decide if you're going to stay in for a full 20 or if you want to get out now. That's kind of an unwritten rule. And at 10 years, I decided, you know, to get out. I wanted to see what it was like being a paralegal. In civilian life. So I did get out. Both Melissa and I got out, and we moved to Indianapolis for a couple of years. And I hated it. I hated being a paralegal. I worked for a law firm that did wills and powers of attorneys and trusts and stuff. Lots of stuff for old people preparing, you know, to die. So, I didn't like it at all. So I decided to go back in the Army. And this was after 9/11 had happened. So that helped.
Okay. You know,
that helped my decision to go back in the Army, because I thought, you know, I could still do something. You know, I think we all kind of felt a calling to do something for your country after 9/11 happened. And I went to the recruiter and I said, hey, this is what I've been, do you have a need for me? And he said, yeah, but not as a legal specialist. We need cooks and we need supply sergeants. And I said, well, I'm not a very good cook, so tell me more about supply. And so they said, okay, we'll let you get back in the Army as a sergeant, and you're going to go to Fort Lee, Virginia, and you're going to learn how to be a supply sergeant. And I went there. I went from Indianapolis to Fort Lee, Virginia, and learned how to be supply. And then I got orders to Fort Hood with the 1st Cavalry Division after I graduated from MOS training at Fort Lee. But yeah, Fort Lee, that was pretty, that was a wild 2 months as well, because if you're what they call being recycled, or if you're reclassifying from one MOS to the other, you're treated differently. You're not treated like a trainee that just came out of basic training. So we would just basically go to class, and that was it. You know, you go to class and then you go home. We all lived in one big bay, which was kind of sucked. But other than that, yeah, it was just 2 months of learning how to do supply. And then I got orders to go to Fort Hood.
Fort Hood, Texas.
Fort Hood, Texas. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And yeah, Fort Hood with the 1st Cavalry Division. I've still got my Stetson. I didn't know how that was going to be. That was a culture shock more than Germany, to be honest. Being a member of the 1st Cavalry Division, I got assigned to a tank battalion. So we had 14 Abrams tanks in our company. I was their supply sergeant. So I was in charge of all the tools and all the tanks and all the guns that we had in the arms room, and ordering all their toilet paper and everything else. That was basically my job for 8 years at Fort Hood.
Okay. So, but this is quite interesting. So, so especially, you know, me as an infantry guy, for me, it's like over the top to be responsible for, you know, normal cars, but being responsible for, you know, even as a company commander, or, you know, with you as a supply guy, this is the most important job, because without gas, without ammunition, without with all the other stuff, nothing works. So, but how big was your, or you've been the main responsible guy in this company?
Yes.
For supply.
Yeah, that was the first company I was in. It was a line tank company. So we had 63 soldiers and 14 tanks and some Humvees as well for the first sergeant. But yeah, we had about $60-70 million worth of property that the company commander signs for the property, but it's the supply sergeant's job to maintain accountability of it. So that was my job. I would each company has three platoons, and they have platoon leaders, lieutenants, who sign for their platoon's worth of property from the commander. But I'm the one that handled the paperwork, you know. And I had I had a specialist that was my supply clerk, who, you know, I would train, and also, you know, he would help me maintain that. Accountability of all this property. And then then I was there for a year, and I went to the headquarters company, and that's where all our medics and our scouts and our mortars and our communications guys are at, the medics big time. And you just had to be accountable for a lot more property in those companies. But yeah, I did that for 8 years. We went to Iraq 3 times while we were at Fort Hood. Yeah, spent 39 months in Iraq. Yeah, that was interesting. First tour, we went there in 2004. Was our first deployment. That was OIF-2, they called it. We were in Eastern Baghdad, play a camp called Camp Cuervo. It was a FOB that we had taken over for the 2nd Cavalry Regiment. And yeah, we spent most of our days going into Sadr City, and that was my job, was to just make sure that the guys had their supplies, that our equipment was accounted for, and that everybody had what they needed, basically.
I see. Yeah, how was it for you being deployed for that long time? So 3 times means, you just said it, like 39 months.
Yeah,
that's more than 3 years, right?
Oh man, more than 3 years. It sucked. I'm not going to lie to you. It was tough on the family. I worked hard, but I know Melissa probably worked twice as hard as I did because she was raising the girls. Our girls were, you know, Alicia was 2 years old when I went to Iraq the first time. Kimberly was five. And you would go and come back and try not to get in her way, you know, because she's been doing everything at home by herself. So you didn't want to you know, step on her toes. So you had to navigate that. But at the same time, you were also turning all your equipment in to get it refitted and clean so you could go back again, you know. So we had like a 12-month deployment, and then we were home for like 15 months. And then we went back for 15 months. We went to Camp Taji for 15 months. Then we came back for 12 months. Then we went back again for another 12 months. So by the time 2010 came along, we were exhausted. And I know I got orders to go to Germany at the end of my third tour in Iraq. There was guys that went back a fourth time, you know. I mean, it was just insane. I mean, they were wearing guys out. And if I had been in less time than I was, because I'd already been in for 10 years, I wouldn't have stayed in, because it didn't seem like it was ever going to end. You were just going back and forth to Iraq. There was guys who would come from Fort Stewart, and they had just returned from Iraq, and they would be home for like 6 months, and then they would go with us to Iraq. And I mean, we were spread so thin with the units. You had guys out of the 82nd Airborne and 101st who would go to Afghanistan for 8 months, and then they'd go home, and then they go to Iraq for 8 months. And it was just, it was crazy. 20 crazy years of just going back and forth to Afghanistan and Iraq. I did not enjoy that at all, but I'm glad that I had the guys that I had with me over there. They were amazing. I was their support guy. You know, I didn't do anything exciting over there. Did a few missions where we would take them chow out to wherever they were at, a satellite location or something. But had the opportunity to serve with some pretty amazing dudes who just, I mean, how they did that for 4 years blows my mind, because, you know, what they were doing was more stressful and more exhausting compared to what I was doing, you know, on the 2-to-3-to-1 scale. So, yeah, the tankers and the scouts and the medics, all the medic especially, that's the most amazing MOS in the Army. I have more respect for medics than any other profession in the military, because they hump with the infantry and the scouts and the engineers, and they go out with everybody. They have to do everything that those other guys do, and then they have to take care of them if one of them gets hurt. So as far as I'm concerned, medics are the most, you know, amazing MOS in the military. So, you know, just to see guys like that in action. And, you know, my job was to make sure that they had everything they needed. And, you know, it was an honor and a privilege to see all the stuff that they did and all the stuff that they went through. I've always been very humbled and just taken aback by some of the, just the men and women that I served with. They were just incredible.
I see. So then shout out to all of the medics, to the guys you served with, and shout out to our wives who support us all the way through. And
absolutely,
I love Melissa, and I still, and it's great that you've been this couple that you are, and that you you were able to do this job for your country, and she was at home and taking care of business. So it was a tough time, I guess. So
absolutely. So, if the guys who went over there again and again and again, not many came back and had, you know, someone waiting.
Healthy relationship.
Yeah. I see. Mm-hmm. So that tells you the kind of woman Melissa is, because she was raising the girls. She went to college while she was raising the girls, and I was in Iraq. Yeah. So, I mean, just it blows my mind how strong she is and how amazing, you know, how incredibly lucky that I am that she picked me, you know, to to be her husband, you know, my dumb.
Yeah, I know. And yeah, I see. And as much as I love Melissa, I'm still afraid if she ever, if I ever piss her off, I will not be in the same room. So she's a strong woman who, for you guys out there, she talks amazing German after only one bottle of martini. So it's just perfect.
She's a badass.
So much fun. So yeah. Okay. So really, really cool. So was it like, you know, going to Germany, you still had back then, you had your house in Texas.
Yeah.
And then going to Germany was kind of a good thing for you to once again go to Germany.
I tell you, I was grateful that I got assigned to the garrison detachment there.
Yes.
Because I didn't have to go back to Iraq or Afghanistan. So it was kind of like a vacation. I'm not going to lie to you. I was the detachment first sergeant for the garrison in Schweinfurt. And it was, I mean, it was a lot of work. It was a lot of paperwork, but you know, we've talked about that. I don't mind paperwork. It was, we were in charge of the military police and the chaplains in the garrison, basically. Those were my soldiers. Mm-hmm. Being able to take my family, Melissa and Kimberly and Alicia, to Germany and at their age was just a treat. Being able to to go to Hanau and, you know, Moin Moin and all that good stuff. And it was, going to Germany. We went to Rome. We went to England. We went to Paris, went to Czech.
Yes.
And everywhere we'd go to Munich on the train almost every weekend. We had so much fun, you know, on the Schönesfokenende, you know, Deutsche Bahn ticket or just traveling around Bavaria and going to different festivals and drinking Glühwein what a good, you know, like you said, donors talk and.
Yes. Or even meeting us in Germany. That was such, we still remember that, you know, being on the frozen Elbe River and enjoying
it. So that was so much fun going to, what is that? The haunted,
the
house that we mansion. Went to.
So we still have,
miniature land.
The dungeon.
Or going to Hammelburg and hanging out with Kevin Dunn and all the German soldiers and teaching them English and stuff. And then trying to do the German PT test with Eric Dusin.
Yes.
And it was so much fun.
Yes, it was. So, and this is something I really, when we met back then, it was like, you're really making the best out of it, like being there. So, you know, you've told me that there are some soldiers that never leave the base, or if the PX doesn't have milk, that the woman would say, like, how should we feed our children? And it was like this, right? So and you just went out and enjoyed, like, being there, right?
Yes. I was lucky that, you know, I had been to Germany multiple times before I went to Schweinfurt. But we called them barracks rats. There were guys there were fewer of them in Schweinfurt than my first assignment in Heilbronn. But there were guys that just liked to hang out in their room and drink Budweiser and watch AFN, you know. But there was so much to do. I mean, I don't understand people that don't get out and see the amazing history that's in Germany. I mean, I remember going to the mall with you in Hanau, and you told me a lot about, you know, different history in Germany and going to your house and having dinner with you. And and, you know, meeting Susan. If you don't go out, you're not going to experience that stuff. And, you know, some people don't regret it, but there's the German people do drink milk, so yeah, you could leave the base and get milk from this from the Lidl or
or a Lidl. Yeah, right, exactly.
Lidl.
Yeah, okay,
sorry,
yeah. So yeah, yeah. So okay, that but that's the thing. So that's something I was really impressed, and you know, you being a smart guy and with your family, and you just enjoyed it, and this is something cool. Okay, and then you know, time was up for the army. You had your full 20 years, and then you left, and now you're doing what you've planned to do, like for like back when 18-year-old Gary left the high school. And how cool and how awesome
how
is that?
Cool is that?
So we.
You know,
and now you.
I was lucky, and that's been the story of my life, just lucky. we went back to Texas because we were in Fort Hood for 8 years. So we had bought a house in Copper's Cove, and we went back to Copper's Cove, Texas, and the girls were in school still. Kimberly was, they were both in junior high, as a matter of fact. But I knew I needed to do something. So I was like, well, let's do that college thing. And I went to Central Texas College, which is in Killeen, and maybe five minutes from my house. And they had a radio and television broadcasting program there.
Yes.
So I could learn how to be a broadcaster. So I signed up for some classes, and they had a television and radio station on campus. And if you were a student there, you got to get real world experience in those television and radio stations. And they had weekend student jobs that you could sign up for working in the television station and master control, basically watching Sesame Street and stuff and making sure that the signal goes out. So I got a job at the TV station working on the weekends.
Yes.
Monitoring the TV and getting ready for the next day and stuff. You know, it was real basic stuff, but important, you know, a job making like $8 an hour, but it was a invaluable experience more than anything. It was, and then the radio station job came open and I applied for that and I got that job and I worked as the board operator for the same radio station on the campus. And did that for a couple of years. I went I went from Central Texas College to Arizona State University and studied mass communications there and received my bachelor's degree. And when I finished that, everybody that I had been working with at the radio station started retiring because they were all in their 60s and 50s. So positions were open, and I applied for the programming job, which is what I'm still doing to this day, like 4 years later.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And you enjoyed it. Yeah. And it's so cool. Yeah. So, and this would be the last question for today. Perhaps we come back because your life is just, you know, it's just so different and there's so many things you saw, and you just said it, you've been a lucky guy, but luck comes only to the guy or to the persons who are who do something, you know. If you're just being lazy and laid back, then you never get lucky, and this is what you deserve. And what do you like most nowadays? Is it, you know, like producing stuff, or like being in front of a microphone like now and broadcasting something? What do you prefer?
I like producing and being the program director. There's more talented people out there hosting our shows, and our weatherman. We have our radio station has a weatherman. He's been doing it for 40 years. He was an Air Force, meteorologist in Vietnam and stuff. Yeah. I mean, the guy is just incredible. He's got like six black belts and stuff. He's a good dude, but he's a crazy man. We have some really cool show hosts, and there's really cool people in our area. And that's the fun thing about it is I can do all this from North Carolina, even though the station is in Texas. So, So I get to spend most of my day with my puppies and in my shorts and flip flops And
perfect. I love it. I love
it. Get much better than this. No.
Yeah, it's cool, fun.
And once a month I interview the mayor of Killeen.
Yes.
I interview, like you said, Miss Payton. I find people. Mm-hmm. I get, you know, emails all the time saying, hey, this book came out. Do you want to interview the author? And I do that. Yes. And we do public service announcements. We find new shows. We produce a Sunday morning gospel show. We have high school football during the fall and winter. I mean, there's all kinds of good stuff about this station. It's a public radio station that plays like easy listening music. So the music's amazing. Yes. If you like Barry Manilow and Glenn Campbell and all those other those oldies but goodies, and it's a fun radio station with good people, and like I said, lucky. I'm just that describes my life, you know. Just another everybody started retiring as soon as I graduated from college, so I was able to just take the experience that I had while I was a student working there, and you know, take it from there. So it was really cool. Yes.
Gary, thank you so much. How cool was it? It was a fast pace through your life, and I'm sure there are anecdotes you would still do enough, but it was so much fun. So thank you. Thank you very much for your time. I enjoyed it so much. I now even know you a little bit better. So it's just
we're going to have to turn this around and do the next time we do this, I want to interview you. So I can I can put you on my radio station. We can talk to like being a because you grew up in East Germany, you said, which is fascinating. Yes. I'd like to learn more about that and what it was like, you know, being a captain, you know, an infantry captain, and how you and Susie met, and so we're gonna turn this around, and we'll do another one, and I want to learn more about your life, like you just learned about mine.
Yes, but you have my word, but I need to work on my English, but
I need to work on my German better, because your English is incredible. I love it, and any time that I can sit down and talk to you for an hour is a good hour, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, and it's the same for me. So once again, thank you very much for you out there. So thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I'm sure you enjoyed it getting to know Gary, and he's just a great guy. And be safe out there. So go out, do things, and we see you next time. Thank you, Gary, and for all you out there, goodbye.
Thank you.